Quiet, please.
You're listening to Birdies and Bogeys, hosted by Jordan Bloxham and Weston Mon, bringing you golf's week in review, recapping your favorite tournaments with professional insight from their perspective. Now, quiet, please. Here's your hosts, Jordan and Weston.
Weston, whoa.
Wow, things have happened in the last 24 hours.
Wow, I am glad that I had an early morning this morning, so we had to postpone to this evening recording.
Oh my god!
Because we had to do a back-to-backer.
We would have. It's just too much going on right now.
Oh my gosh. So I'm went and played golf this morning early.
Oh, good.
So the early morning was go to the gym before. So early morning.
Yeah.
But yeah, I get on the 11th hole. And like, I look at my phone and just pop it open. It's like 9 o'clock in the morning. Went out at 7. Playing fast because there's nobody in front of us.
Yeah.
It's 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, why do I have 6 texts since the last time I looked at my phone 15 minutes ago?
Right.
And yeah, that's why. It is because the came down the pipe that LIV, PGA Tour, and DP World Tour agreed in principle to a merger.
Say what?
A merger?
What?
Is it what? What? Is it who? What?
That's I mean, obviously caught the world.
Well,
for sure.
Well, obviously with things that have happened and have been said, right?
Yep.
But things that have actions speak louder than words. Isn't that the statement? And I've mentioned it. I felt that with the PGA Tour's moves, that next they were creating a pathway for players to come back. Did I think it would be this? No.
Yeah.
Not a chance. And there's a lot of stuff to shake out, but I mean, it was like people went bonkers. Like,
people are losing their crap. And this is really why. We've actually, me and you have been pretty unbiased through the situation. We don't necessarily favor LIV, and we don't necessarily favor the PGA Tour. We really try to look at it as a pretty unbiased perspective. We had our own opinions laced into it, of course, but we always felt Monahan was a douchebag,
and his stance was super hard,
super harsh, and furthermore, as I talked with people out in the open about LIV and whatever, a lot of people that were kind of fed a certain narrative from maybe the Golf Channel or whatever really had a negative outlook on LIV. Like, oh, that's not going to last. That's just, it's dead in a year. I listened to Brandel Chambly and a number of other talking heads, and
oh my gosh,
I believe them. So that it's gone. I have no interest in this.
Speaking of Brandel Chambly, like the look on his face.
Oh,
like he looks like somebody beat his dog.
I was going to say murdered his dog. But so there was some really interesting narratives floating around and point of view. Some people were very anti-LIV, and some people were kind of on the fence. Like, I don't even freaking care. And then some people were like pro-LIV. And I think this particular event of the merger really exposes what the true narrative is. And people are like, really thrown off guard because they were fed a certain meal for a really long time.
Really long time. And like I said, and it's there's definitely some things, right, that Liv could have done better. Full show. And that I think they're still working on, but just having this. But I think the biggest thing that caught my eye is like you had somebody like Brando Chamblee say, this is one of the saddest things that's happened in the golf world ever. And I'm like, really? I'm like, no, this is a good thing. This
The
is two
saddest thing.
entities coming together to make the game better. How they
Absolutely.
work it, right? Because it's still not finalized, and it could still be two groups coming together in the best interest of the game, but still with two separate tours.
Yeah.
But it did say that there's a possibility that players can, from the LIV Tour after the 2023 season, can apply. Doesn't mean they're going to necessarily get it back.
Yeah.
So there's
Well,
not, they're not like, oh, we're handing everything back to them.
yeah, it's going to be a process for sure. And the reality is I think the PGA Tour looked at the product that Liv was, and they're probably like, what if we did have the best 40 or 50 players in the world playing this format? This could be really
Really
exciting.
awesome.
Yeah, because we only got a portion, maybe one fifth
Yeah.
of the best players in the world, but you get the whole 100%, and that's a really exciting thing. And we can expand on the team aspect of it. Like
Yeah.
there's
Oh my
rumors
gosh.
Nike's
Like,
going to sponsor a team or TaylorMade will sponsor a team. Like that's crazy
well, you
talk.
think about it, right? Because you have teams now that can buy sponsorship on an NBA jersey, right?
Yeah.
Think about this. You have the 48 best players in the world with interchangeable parts, right?
Yep.
Just like, kind of a team. But you do 10 to 12 tournaments outside of the PGA Tour tournaments, and you have the best players. And you might need to change some rules around that those do count as played events or whatever. But can you imagine, like, hey, you have a team that's consistent of the first, the 16th player, the 20, right? And you can jockey it in there, but then you have corporations come in and sponsor these teams,
Yeah,
and
the possibilities
so
are
you're
endless.
getting Koepka playing against Morikawa and in a team format and this type stuff where it's. Yeah, I think it could be fun. And I think they would do limited, and I think there's a spot
There's
for it
yeah,
if they do it right.
I think so. And I mean, let's get the good stuff like on the table. Like, what does this really do? Because we're going to get into some dirty stuff, right?
No, the good thing is like the thing that
Pretty
I like, and we'll get to it, but I'm like, that's good.
Yeah.
It's good. Now you have the best players in the world possibly playing together more than just 4 to 6 times a year.
Totally. And maybe they'll cut it down to six tournaments a year or keep it at 12. Who knows? But the good thing is this makes it a world tour, which was actually our vision from the
Yeah.
beginning. We
Well,
want this.
there was a guy online that I read, Andrew Rice, who's a really good instructor. He was like, can you imagine this being a worldwide tour? And somebody's like, most of them live in the United States. Why would they want to travel? It's taxing. And I'm like, they do it anyway. And if
Yeah.
you limit the number of times they travel and you're like, okay, we're going to go on a European swing, that's one time traveling through there, or you go on an Asian swing and you separate them out. So they're still traveling, but they're not traveling like to Australia and then back to the United States and then
Yeah.
to Japan and back to the United States and then to Thailand and back to the United States. It's what the LPGA Tour does right now.
And it,
When
to me, like to see what happened in Australia with the LIV Tour event, like there's a lot of great that comes from having a golf exposure to other people in other countries. And this really, I mean, bringing the DP World Tour in, Because we know that it's always been a feeder tour now. It's basically an extension of the Corn Ferry. It will be absolved, and it'll be like Corn Ferry US, Corn Ferry, you know, UK or European Union, whatever. So you get a true international tour with the live events mixed into it. Like, that's awesome. I think it's phenomenal. And I think it's really going to grow the game. Frankly, you know, I saw a funny comment, plot twist. This was the plan all along, to grow a bunch of hype around these two elements and then bring them together.
You couldn't have kept it quiet this long.
I know.
No chance.
No way.
But it is interesting to hear, and I just caught snippets of their CNBC interview, right? So from my understanding, there was like four people who really knew, which was Jay. Who's the PIF?
Yasser.
And then two other guys like Duffy, something. Can't.
Well, the way that Phil responded,
I think he may have had, because somebody said his cryptic tweets and stuff, but
things really leveled off for a little bit.
And he was like, oh, this, and he's like, his cryptic tweets kind of gave screen saying he maybe knew something, but people were like, oh, I found out on Twitter, but I was scrolling through old man Facebook, and David Frost, who's a senior PGA guy now, played on the tour for a long time, said everybody got emailed. So if they were checking their emails, they knew of this before it came out on Twitter.
Yeah.
So, but I think what the format is for most of these guys is it pops up on their Twitter before they go check their email, right? It's first thing.
Oh, totally.
You know, half of these guys aren't playing in the RBC, or if they're at the RBC, they're not checking their email, but their phone gets popped up and
the rattle goes around. Personal assistants that check email.
Yeah.
You know, so totally. I'd say there's a large portion, unless you're getting some kind of push SMS notification, you're going to hear the news first. And a lot of people just woke up and mentioned that, like, oh, the world's just changed. And I'm finding this out on Twitter today.
And so people were like flabbergasted, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, a couple of things that we'll dive into, because there was a lot of good, like really crazy good stuff that happened this weekend in golf, right? With Victor winning the Memorial, which is his first win on U.S. soil. Rose Zhang wins in first ever player to win in their first professional tournament, right? Mm. The tournament as a professional. And then you had the longest day in golf yesterday with all the qualifiers. And we did have one local kid with local ties with Preston Summerays qualifying, and a bunch of other. There was like five. There was one local club pro here who was in the one, and like five college players that had, or four college players and a couple of high school kids that are just graduating this year. But so it took that and kind of threw all that, which is what our main topic would have been about if this wouldn't have come out. But yeah, it took a lot of that and just threw it kind of on the back burner, which is too bad, but it's just something you can't ignore.
No,
right?
No,
it's good. I think it's good all around. And once all the things get shaken out, the one thing that I will say, and my first thoughts was, Monahan's gone. He's got to be gone after this, right?
Yep.
But, and there's still a chance for that. But if the deal gets finalized, he has protected himself a little bit by in this new entity, for-profit entity, where the PGA Tour is a non-profit organization he predicts himself as he will be the CEO, and then Yasser will be chairman? Yeah, chairman. So
I mean, let's dig into that, the bad of it. Like the worst aspect of this is here we have a PGA Tour commissioner who probably had to confront players like Rory McIlroy, Tiger Woods, John Rahm, Victor Hovland, these people who got offers to go join LIV. And he had to convince them not to take the money. And we don't know what he said, but based on media, there was a lot of things he said, like things I remember the most, have you ever had to apologize for being a member of the PGA Tour?
Yeah.
Like, so basically he was throwing the money that was backing the LIV Tour under the bus because it was Saudi Arabian. So there was a lot of things like the 9/11 coalition letters that went out to the players and things. So there was a lot of dirt thrown. And here he's been doing that, convincing players not to take those payouts. And then here he is accepting that money for himself. Well,
and it's gonna be a huge amount, which, like you said, and that's where people are torn. They're like, well, he's a sellout. He's taking this money. I'm like, if it expands the game and the tour for better, right? And there's things like when the PGA Tour split from the PGA of America, when they created the PGA Tour officially, right? The organization, they split from the PGA of America. And why was that? Because the players wanted more money. This, and when LIV came out, it created a significant increase in a short amount of time in purses and the amount of money that the players are getting paid. And that's what this move is, right?
It has a positive impact on the players for sure, but maybe not to the 10 marquee players that declined the offer.
Right. They look at it and they're like, well, wait a second. Right. And the rumors are it was $800 million for Tiger they just turned down.
Yep.
Right. And whether Jade went to him and said, don't take it. I know he went to Rory. I know he went to a couple of other guys. But then it was Rory was rumored to have been offered $500 million. Right. And Hideki was rumored to $300 million. And I mean, let's be honest, the way Hideki's playing right now, I mean, let's just look at it, because he had a fairly decent week until the last
weekend. For sure.
Because he's made on the tour this year. Hideki, let's just look at his profile for the year. He's 57th in the FedEx Cup. Why does it not show his this year's? Because it shows his overall, $43 million is his overall. I just want it for this year. Show me this year. Surely. Forking me off. Yeah, it doesn't show what he's won this year so far. But he's had two top tens this year. No wins this year. So two top tens this year. So he hasn't, like, played overly well, right?
Nope.
He could have had a buttload of cash.
Oh, he could be, like, set up for life. Like, a lot of these guys got, to me, contracts that were what I'd consider like generational wealth.
Yeah.
You know, DJ, sure. Did he pull $200 million? Not to mention what else he earned on top of that. Yeah. And now it's like, hey boys, I'm back. And so it's, you know, and maybe he has a career afterwards, or maybe he doesn't. It doesn't really matter. He never could have amassed what he did, which was like maybe $250 million in the last
short amount of time. In the span of years, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
So, like I said, overall, I think it's good. And I think it'll shake out it'll be interesting to see what everything is. One of the stipulations of the agreement to get it to go through is both parties have to drop their lawsuits against each other.
Yeah, which brings up a really good point because we were almost at a point in the lawsuits where the books were going to be opened on each of these entities to be reviewed in court.
Yes.
Oof.
Both sides.
Both sides.
Both sides. I think there are some things that the PGA Tour, and we've referenced it, there's definitely stuff on there that they're like, well, we don't necessarily need that out.
It's sports and there's money, there's stuff.
There's stuff
Oh, that's
everywhere.
all. And the reality of the PGA Tour, it's a very unique organization because somehow when it was formulated, it gained a 501c nonprofit status,
Yes.
which is interesting.
Yeah.
So, you open up the books on that. And then there's legal review, and maybe the IRS starts to look into things. Things could get a little hairy. So I think there was some motive around that. And other people online have alluded to it. And one and one equals two. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. And some of that, like said, you. Yeah, I kind of wanted to have that happen. And
Yeah,
I think there were some
I did.
people, I think Mickelson wanted that to happen to some extent, right? He was like,
Yeah.
there are some issues with the PGA Tour and how it's ran that
Well,
nobody knows about.
my biggest issue was that the commissioner was making more than any one of like the top five players, with the exception of the guy who won the FedEx Cup, right? So you factor in that that guy is doing that, like, whew, that's a lot of
Yeah.
money.
And it was also interesting to hear without all this. And this is one thing that I will say that Brandon Chamblee makes good points every once in a while. And
Yeah.
he said that the sponsors, when they went through it, right, there was, I think there was some rumoring from the sponsors like, hey, you realize who's invested in us? You realize where some of our money comes from. And he did make a point where he's like, there are sponsors, some of the major sponsors on the P for the PGA Tour are getting money, and getting some of their funding comes from the same people that Monahan and everybody was hammering. So, right, that's part of it. It's like that. You got the LPGA Tour. One of the major sponsors of the LPGA Tour is funded by the PIF. Right? Armco is a huge sponsor of the LPGA Tour. It's a huge part of the DP World Tour. So they were getting money from there. Now they're like, okay, it's this. And I think what they can do is now the PGA Tour can be a truer 501c, and they can run for-profit stuff through this, and it's fully funded by the PIF, this new entity. So, like I said, we can speculate on what's going to happen, and we will, and it until it. My guess is there's too much money involved for it not to end up going through, right? Some things would have to happen pretty big time for it not to go through, in my opinion. But overall, I think it's going to be good for golf and the golf fan. And all these people are like, oh, I'm out on golf now.
Well,
I'm like, really? You're just gonna watch college golf and
the
that's it.
Champions Tour? I mean, what do you?
No, because the Champions Tour is going to get rolled up
Oh, yeah.
into this, right? Somehow
So
the LPGA Tour is gonna get a share, right? There's nothing said about them, but it'll roll into into other tours.
Yeah. To me, it's like, it's good. I mean, at least from a community standpoint, you don't have to pick sides and you don't have to feel uneasy about the guy who's pro live or who's only PGA tour. And you know, there's bad feelings between you guys. It's like, all that's over. It's all one now. You got one and, big golf monopoly and it's just over.
Another interesting thing is it doesn't sound like Norman's going to be involved in the new entity.
and maybe that's what he signed up for. He originally wasn't a catalyst, you know. Right. The real catalyst was Yasser. He originally went to the PGA Tour and said, "Hey guys, let's do a global tour." And the PGA Tour was like, "Heck no."
Right. And then
he was like, "Well, I'll just make my own league, my own tour." And like, "God, good luck with that." And then he did. And he got Greg involved.
And he got Greg. And right. And it may have been the move that he needed. And Greg's like, "Okay, I did what I had set out to do when he first came with the idea of basically the WGC, right? Of a global tour." And he's like, "Okay, I did my worth. I'm out."
Yeah. And maybe that was part of the thing. Like, we're going to combine with the PGA Tour sometime, Greg. Like, this is just inevitable, but we want you to run live. And when we do, guess what? We're going to bankroll you. Here you go.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he was well compensated for what he did, because he co-created a product that was so competitive that the PGA Tour needed to talk and merge. I mean, that's, you don't get overlooked for doing something like that.
Well, and the one thing that surprised me is, as well as Yasser on that thing, is Monahan and Yasser met a number of times.
Yeah.
In the last 6 months. So, you know, whether how long this has been coming down for them to keep it this quiet and to get this right and to announce it like this is pretty crazy. But I think there's players that are obviously upset, but I think for it to come to the point where it is now, it had to stay within the four people who were basically, all right, Monahan, Yasser, and two other guys. Like, one of them, he's a pretty hard or big player, but I can't remember his name right now. But no, I was shocked but excited at the same time when I heard it. So, like I said, I think it'll be a great thing for the game of golf. All the people that say they're out, well, yeah, then be out. Don't watch good golf. That's your loss.
Yeah. No, it's great for the game. There's some weird aspects to it, but I think I mean, it's, social media's been blowing up about it. And all I can say is, like, well, I kind of told you so. Like, that's always been my stance.
Yeah.
And it's like they were gonna have to figure something out, and now they have, and they've come together. And I think it's really interesting, though, is like, decisions weren't made until the decision makers got their payday. That's essentially what's boiled it down. So it sucks that way, but the people with the gold make the rules. That's kind of how the world works.
Yeah, and it's there. It'll benefit.
It'll have a trickle down, but just not as much. I do know that a lot of PGA Tour players are not happy.
No, and they think it's gonna, but I'm like, how? Overall, in my opinion is that it's actually going to give more players an opportunity to play, right?
Because
when LIV was created, they took players away that added more spots where people could come on. Now, where the PGA Tour has to get better is rather than bringing on stupid exemptions into tournaments and bringing on guys that shouldn't, like the one thing that, like Kevin Stadler walked out of the meeting. So he was up at the RBC, Canadian RBC. So he's obviously playing, right? Mm-hmm. How long has it been since Kevin Stadler has been relevant? Right? They had Jeff Ogilvie that they interviewed. So he's obviously playing this week. When was the last time Jeff Ogilvie was relevant in a PGA Tour event? Mike, you got to clean that up. That's one of the things you have to do. And yes, the LIV, they didn't get as many players as they thought they would get, right? So they had some players down at the bottom that probably, right, shouldn't be playing in these events. And I think that's something that is going to change. I think you're going to have a lot more players, top players, playing in these events. Now, if they can just clean it up and get in better players, pull more players from Korn Ferry events when they need to fill these, right? Top of the Korn Ferry Tour, pull from, you know, top college players and give them exemptions and things like that that make the game better to watch, right? Bringing in better players, the competition will get better. People are like, well, what about the guys that are 125 to 150? And I'm like, play better. And it's going to give you more options. You're going to have more options for money, right? Obviously, everybody who plays enough gets 500, was it 550 guaranteed if they don't make that during a year, if they're a member of the tour. I'm like, how's that not helping the guy that's down at the bottom of the money list, even now?
It forced the PGA Tour's hand, which was great. And so we saw some awesome increases. And with this expansion and reorganization of the tours, we're going to see a trickle-down effect for sure. We're going to see people benefit. We're going to see more people getting more opportunities into maybe second-tier events, as I'll call them, instead of the elevated events, right? Because there's elevated, and then as LIV gets woven into this, then it's like a world golf where now you have like the marquee players are out that week in that event, and then they have a secondary event running simultaneously where more players get the opportunity to be in a field and make some cash and earn their way onto the PGA Tour.
Earn their way into into elevated events, right?
Yeah, and then get elevated points to where, hey, you might slip your way right into a LIV event, and then you win and you pull out $4 million. So,
yeah,
I think it's great, for those guys up and coming, and I mean, it is what it is. Lots of stuff still unfolding about it. Probably more news getting poured out as we speak, but super exciting. It's definitely polarizing, but I think it's great.
Oh, I think it's tremendous. I mean, I don't think there, if it goes through, I don't think there's going to be anything. I think it's going to be a positive all around, all the way around. Right. Yeah. I think it was definitely way quicker than I expected, but you know, it is what it is. It is what it is. And I'm excited. So I think it'll help all the way down. And the people are like, well, what about the guys at the bottom? I think there's actually going to be more opportunity for players to make a living playing golf and a better living. So All in all, it's good. I'm glad we waited so that we didn't have to do a double, a special episode on this. But it'll be good. Like I said, it'll be all shape, it'll all shake out. And somebody said it, and I can't remember who it was, but it was like, they're like, in 6 months, nobody's, this isn't going to be that big of a deal. In a year, it's going to be like just, business as usual. There'll be things that'll come out, but in a year, it'll just shake out and it'll be what it is. So now let's get into some golf, because there was some good golf.
Oh, there was.
Hard golf. And I was playing golf on Sunday, and one of the guys that I was playing with, he was like, I didn't realize, he's like, I didn't realize Muirfield was that tough. And I'm like, no, it's a butt kicker. Like, 'cause it took to people. I mean, you had Hideki leading, and all of a sudden he just has a four hole stretch where all of a sudden he's lost five shots. And you're just like, well, how does that happen? Well, you have to hit good shots. It was running, and Jack was on there. And the funny thing is Jack wants a roll back of the ball, right?
Yeah.
But he also wants the course firm and fast. I'm like, those don't jive. Because now you got balls rolling out 60 yards and getting players into spots where they're hitting shots and they're rolling through into bad spots or getting into some difficult positions. And like I said, and I don't mind the greens being firmer. I think he's got it, and as much as he is my favorite player of all time, but I think his thought on it was, if you hit good shots and then you have the greens are holding, so you can still hit shots. I'm like, this should be the other way around. You should be able to have to hit good shots from the fairway into firmer greens.
Yeah.
But his thing was, he wants the fairways fast and firm, but then the greens to be fairer. I'm like, well, that's, to me, that's backwards. But
It's totally backwards. It doesn't make any sense at all. You're gonna get 40 to 50 yards of roll out of a freaking fairway, and now you want a soft green to throw a 56 degree wedge in. Get out of here.
so, but like, I mean, you look at it, and McCarthy doesn't have a bogey until the final two holes of his day. One was 18. Well, they were both on 18. One was in regulation and one was in the playoff with Victor Hovland. But I mean, Victor plays great, and I didn't realize that they were tied going into the day because they both shot 70 in the final round. But I think there was like three or four guys tied at the top. But then you had a guy like Scheffler, who craziest stats. Like, he led the field in everything except for putting. He was, of the players who made the cut, he was dead last in putting, which, let's talk about that. What has happened to his putter? Because it has gone, like, did he freeze it? Did he send it to like Antarctica and it's like frozen solid? And because he has been so good with everything. Like, they were going through the stats, and it was like he was like, I think, second from tee to green. But not only was he second tee to green, but he was like first or second. I think he was maybe first tee to green, and he was second in shots gained around the green. So he was good. And when he did miss a green, he was good with his wedge. But he lost eight shots, strokes gained, with his putter and ended up one back. And it's the second week in a row that he's done this, that he's
Yeah.
missed a playoff by one because his putter's been ice.
I'd be curious because strokes gained is a measurement on the field, not necessarily in comparison to the course.
It's the field.
And
But
so,
if you're dead last to the field, that means you're struggling mightily where everybody else isn't.
no, it's not good, obviously. But at the same time, it's like there, I don't know the data on it, but I believe you can't be amazing at strokes gained putting if you're excelling in like strokes gained to the green in approach. Because it's like a trade-off.
Yeah, it is a little bit of a trade up, but not that much. But to have that stats, because I mean they correlate a little bit, right? It was, I know that when I think when Tony took second in or shot a 62 in Vegas, and it was the first time anybody had been worse, like the worst putting and shot that I but it's, I mean, it's nuts. Like, just crazy.
Yeah.
But Victor did it when he needed to, right? It's a tremendous putt on 17 to get within one. Has a pretty good up and down, makes a good putt on 18 in regulation. Because I think his putt came out, or his chip on 18 came out way softer than he had expected to get it there. But yeah, but it's crazy to think that he has now what, 5 wins? This is
Yeah.
his first one that has been on US soil.
It is. It's crazy. Like he owns Mexico, then he won in like Asia and somewhere else. But the fact that he's put it together, I mean, we knew he was going to do it. It was just a matter of time. And we thought maybe there was some weird curse, but no, there's not.
There's
And
not.
it's just a good freaking player. And I think the thing I love about Victor Hovland the most is his swing is so homegrown. And you
Yeah.
just can't say anything about it because it's proficient. I love that he like takes it inside and then he recorrects at the top and then drops down the line and his stance is like 15 degrees closed and he just flags it. Like to
Just
me, I love
yeah.
them, those swings.
And he's getting like, and he is what some guys don't do is they don't realize they're like, oh yeah, I'm not good at this, so I'm just going to excel at everything else. But he's like, I need something. So he's went to with Joe Mayo, and Joe Mayo has done some really good work because his short game has been significantly better in this year than it has in the past. Right. In spots where he used to, like, it was a no-brainer that if he was 4 paces off the green, but there was nothing but fringe in front of him, there was a good chance he was using this putter, and that's not always the case. So it's putting him in the thing, but it's crazy to see him getting better at that, which will lead. Right, ends up one back at the PGA, and putted and chipped it pretty well there. So he's doing good work, and I think it's only a matter of time. I think he'll put himself in enough positions where he'll get his major, by the end, two or three maybe. I just think that'll keep he'll be similar to Adam Scott, right? Where he'll win
Win a major, win 10, 12 times.
10, yeah, 10, 12 times, but just not be good enough with a short game to get it done more than a couple times in majors, but
Yeah.
I'm working hard. And then first time we've talked to LPGA for a while, but Rose Zhang, right? She had hype, big time hype coming out of college, and gets it done in her first first LPGA start as a professional.
Big deal.
Big deal. The craziest thing is this: she does not make one birdie in her final round. Not one. So she goes. She shoots two over. Ends up tied with Jennifer Capuccio, and they both. Rose makes a really good putt for par in the first playoff hole, which is basically the same putt she had to win it in regulation and just missed. But knocks that in. Capuccio knocks in like a four or five footer to tie, and then just hits a dart with a hybrid.
Of course.
With a hybrid to about 11 feet. It was a tough flag because it was all the way at the back of the green. Tough flag to get to. And then Capuccio's, who's much longer, had another shot and just, I mean, left it on the front of the green. So she had like 65 feet, putted it off the back of the green. Mm-hmm. Almost made the putt coming back from off the green. But then Rose just nestled one up there, tapped in for par for her first win. So it's, it was kind of, because I watched it, and then I watched her, actually watched her post-round interview in round three, and like the attitude that she has, her demeanor, she's going to win a lot. Because she's like, oh, I didn't feel like it had pressure. I felt like it was support, right? She's like, I didn't feel like there was all these expectations that are on me. I felt like it was everybody. I would love this. She's like, I think her quote was, I love the support that I'm getting from everybody, rather than, yeah, I feel the expectations that I'm supposed to win. It was cool, but I think she'll be awesomely dominant, maybe the next dominant and first dominant American for a while.
Yeah.
Because Nelly's been at the top, but she's kind of faded off, even though she's stuck at kind of the top of the world golf rankings. But I think her demeanor is just in that space for her to win a lot. I don't think that this will be her first win this year or her only win this year. I think she'll win a couple more, and then she'll, because of this win, now she'll have LPGA Tour status. She's now eligible to play on the Solheim Cup. So, a lot of good stuff. Now, into our sweet spot. What's in the bag? What is in Victor Hovland's bag?
Golf clubs.
Rosang's Galloway from top to bottom.
Yeah.
let's go through hers. But
there. Victor, he just does what we've kind of been seeing. Through PGA Tour players in the top end of the bag, but Ping G 425 LST 9 degrees at 8.4 with the Fujikura Speeder 661 TRX, which he's been playing for a while.
Long time, because it's an older shaft.
Yeah,
for sure. It's not even a current offering in their lineup that they have.
Yeah,
for general retail. Retail.
And he's still rocking the 425 despite the 430 being out for some time.
Right.
And this is where he pretty much follows suit of what I think a lot of people should be doing nowadays. He plays a 3-wood, but it's actually 15 degrees set at 16.5, which makes it a 4-wood. And so he goes 4-wood, 7-wood. And both of them are playing.
He goes 4-wood, 5-wood, basically.
Oh, okay, you're 18.75. He took the 7-wood, which it's labeled as, and then bumped it up to 18.75. Yeah.
Yeah, which he may just like the shape of that head because it is a little smaller.
And it's interesting because for me, it's really easy to say, oh, well, if it's if it's loft X, then it's this club, right?
Right.
But I think in fittings, you've probably seen this, like the Ping G430 Max may be a club that spins more.
It does.
And when you have that kind of spin, that 7-wood may not be an effective club with the 7-wood loft.
Right.
And he had to adjust it to get the right kind of distance gapping based on what kind of spin it generates. And so I think there's a little massaging in those types of aspects of it, but you know, it's about getting that number. And
then he goes into his, he's still got the I210s in the bag.
Yeah.
With his KBS or V120Xs. And I think, didn't he do a grind on the, doesn't he have a grind on these? I think we talked about it previous.
He used to. He's bounced between it. He had a custom sole grind to add a little bit of spin, but he's back to normal now. Only because, like, that happened like 2 years ago that he did that, and it was really cool. But golf balls have changed since then. We've had a new release of Titleist, and they probably added an offering that maybe fit what he needed based on the clubs not needing to be altered. There's all kinds of interesting aspects to that stuff. But yeah, I don't think he has the custom sole grind on him anymore.
Yeah, no, he's, but whatever it is, it's working. Strikes it. Yes. Then goes, has the Ping Glide 4.0s, 50, 56, and 60. With the same shafts, except for the 60, where he goes into the tour issue S400s.
Yeah, this is a really, well, I mean, he is a Ping staffer, but he has historically played Vokey wedges in some areas at the bottom of his bag, but he's gone full Ping, and that's a good thing. I personally think Ping wedge technology is really good.
Really good.
They spin amazingly in a lot of variable conditions, but from a looks perspective, aesthetically, I think they struggle in the market as a whole. There are other wedges out there that I would much more be comfortable playing based on a looks perspective.
Yes.
So, but the fact that Victor's rocking them, I mean, that's pretty cool. I mean, maybe Ping's getting a little bit different in their perspective on how they should shape their wedges. And that could be a positive thing, but I don't know.
No, yeah, like I said, that's one thing. I think the new wedges feel great. I just, looking down at them is not, not my favorite. Let's just say
that. No, it's hard. It's hard. I personally was like, wow, these things had great performance attributes based on the testing that happened out in the market. Let's take a look. So I couldn't put a wedge like that in play because there are certain aspects to it that I just don't feel comfortable with. And it has a lot to do with belly,
right? And
the notching from the leading edge to the hosel. Very much some Ping things happening there that I've never really liked, but they continue to kind of carry that legacy of the old Ping I2 wedge. And that's fine if you want to do that, but it's not everybody's cup of tea.
No, definitely. Definitely not. But yeah, he goes there and then he's got his Ping PLD DS72 prototype.
Yep.
That he's been rolling for a while, and then the Titleist Pro V1, which is interesting because he does play the Pro V1, which is a lower spinning ball. But like you said, they may have done some things to help him improve his spin with the irons, which he did with his sole grind previously. So,
yeah, the Ping putter has a sweet rust finish. And as of late, people have been asking me about rust.
We had a conversation about this.
Yeah.
and we actually, you pulled up their process because One of your customers was actually asking for the ping rust
Being pinned, yeah.
finish. Yeah.
And it, I think I figured it out. It just takes some buffing, some soft buffing to the surface itself. So I took a rusty putter, I gave it the rust bucket finish, but then I did much to break off any of the loose rust that might have been clinging to the surface. So it has a very smooth feel. And then I doused it with some WD-40, which like gives it a perma wet look, even though
Right.
it's dry. So it's a really dark chocolate rusty finish. And then I kept going after it with a vinyl brush to just kind of smooth and polish out that. And it actually has some of that gleam to it, which is cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's pretty boss. The rusty putters, it's fun. You definitely.
Yeah, and like I said, it is a cool look. I may have to try that at some point. But I've just got the black carbon right now, so we're gonna
Yep.
stick with that. It's working pretty well, so we'll stick with that one. But any golf this week so far? I've played 3 days straight now,
Oh,
and tomorrow
you're on
before
golf.
tomorrow before.
I'm doing anti-golf activities. I'm doing I'm coaching at the BYU sports camps for the kids. This week and the week after. And I'll tell you what, when you're out there 8 to 5 working sports camps, the last thing you want to do when you're done is look at anything golf.
Yeah, that'll definitely cause the desire level to go down a little bit. But once you get
Yeah.
with these through with these 2 weeks, you'll be ready to go again.
Yeah, I'll be primed and ready. I've got some good golf lined up for the summer. I'm super pumped, but yeah, this is me right now. It's show up, teach kids how to golf, enjoy and love the game, and then go home and nap because I'm exhausted after it. But
Kids are exhausting, man.
yeah.
That's all there is to it. Kids are exhausting.
Kids are exhausted.
But no, it's good to do these, because you to see, some kids are just there because their parents just want a babysitter for a few days,
Oh,
want
yeah.
them out of their hair. But there are some kids that you'll see and they'll improve. So that's the positive part of it for sure.
Well, I love running into all the kids that are like, hey, do you know Derek Fox? I take lessons from him. Like, well, yeah, I do know Derek. So it's pretty cool to see a lot of these kids roll through the Cougar clinics and have that connection to the impact. So it's pretty awesome.
Pretty fun. Oh yeah. But I think that's it. Like I said, by next time, our next episode, there may be some more stuff that comes out. This will probably be a ongoing topic for the foreseeable future until everything gets finalized. But I'm for it. I'm happy to see that there's some strides to be being made. That, in my opinion, will be a benefit to the game. So it will be good
Yeah,
moving forward.
I'm excited for it. I mean, the year's still going to play out, but I do want to see when everything comes together, where it all ends up. That's I hate waiting, so.
Oh yeah, I mean, they've obviously, going into next year, they have to have some things buttoned up here relatively quick by July, because now the season ends right after or how are they doing it this year? Because I think this going into next year, the season starts January 1. It's not a rollover season anymore, right? Is how they're
Yeah.
doing it. So I guess you do have those kind of non-elevated events at the end of the year to allow some people to try to keep their cards after the tour championship. But my guess is they've got to have this buttoned up July, August, at least the basic framework of it to start moving forward to try to put it together for next year.
Yeah.
So to be continued, folks, to be continued. But I think that's it for this week. It's been a fun day scrolling the social medias.
Oh, you know what? The memes nailed it.
Oh,
Me
it's
call.
awesome.
My favorite is, I think it was Zyre Golf. They posted, they obviously label certain characters in a clip from a TV show. And this one was The Office when Michael Scott created his own paper company and was poaching customers from his. And it was just so funny to see the negotiations there. And I'm like, that's spot on.
There's some good ones for sure. But yeah, everybody, thanks for listening. Give us a rating or review, and until next time, we're out.